Thank you, everyone, for coming to the last installment, or at least for now, unless we decide to continue it, the seventh installment, we'll call it, of our series of shiurim in anticipation of the construction of our new shul, which actually entails also dismantling our current shul. And obviously, as we've seen that part of the work is already starting to be done, we need to be concerned, probably should have thought about this before, are we allowed to be doing this at all? And that's really the conversation we're going to have today. Can we sell this building? Can we dismantle this shul? What has to be done before we take it apart? Or, you know, what are the rules for destroying one shul to build another? So the first thing we have to think about is there any, at what level is the prohibition, is there a prohibition to destroy a shul, or can we just knock down a shul as we want to? So there are those that think that this, there's a pasuk in Devarim, which we've actually talked about before, which talks about the need to destroy pagan things that are found in the land of Israel. So the pasuk says, "Abeta abduin is kol mekomot she abdu sham goyim." You have to destroy all the places that the other nations that are living in the land where they worshipped. Asher atem yorshim osam es Elohim, where the nations that you are inheriting the land from, where they worship their gods. Al yarim harimim va'agvos, whether they're on tall mountains, whether they're in valleys. V'tachas kol etz ra'anan, or they're under trees, doesn't matter where they are. You have to destroy their altars, and you burn down their trees and their images. You have to cut down their images. You have to destroy their name. They shouldn't be mentioned in the land of Israel. They shouldn't even exist. And then the next puzzle says, you should not do the same to Hashem, your God. So, what does it mean, the same? In what way? There's no statues of Hashem. Does it mean not destroying the Mizbeach? What is it referring to? So, says the Sifrei, what does it mean that you shouldn't do the same thing? How do we know that destroying even one stone or from the Beis HaMikdash or from the altar of the Beis HaMikdash or from the courtyard even of the Beis HaMikdash, which has a lower level of Kedusha, that you violate a biblical prohibition? You have to destroy their altars. You do not do the same to Hashem your God. Rabban Gamliel, so the first opinion is it's talking about Beis HaMikdash. Rabban Gamliel omer v'chitala al da'atcha sheishan notzim mizkoseim chas Hashem. You think they're going to destroy their own mizbeach? Ela shelo tasu k'maaseihem. There is no explicit biblical prohibition to destroy, to knock down the Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbeach. No one would even think to do that. There's no need for such a prohibition. Rather, the prohibition is, it's not really a biblical prohibition, it's really just telling you, don't do sins that would lead to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But according to the first opinion, there is a biblical prohibition to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And according to the second opinion, there is no prohibition to destroy the Beis HaMikdash or destroy any part of the Beis HaMikdash because no one would ever do that. And so it's just a general do not sin. Yes.
Do we know if Herod, when he expanded the Beis HaMikdash, if he destroyed any part of it in the process of the beginning structure of the second Beit HaMikdash first, and do we know if that's all responded to that?
The Gemara will talk about Herod. Gemara in Bava Basra talks about Herod, so we'll get to that. We are going to read these Gemaras. Yes?
What if I establish an altar to Hashem?
Where?
Like, if I just, like, when? Thought that I was going to start practicing Korbanot, you know,
now?
In Brighton.
Yes.
It's an altar.
Yes, so that would be a violation of biblical prohibition, and you certainly would be allowed to destroy such an...
You would be allowed to destroy
Obama? Yeah, absolutely.
You're not allowed to have that in the first place.
No.
Nobody
right.
says you
it's
can
a,
destroy it.
Right,
so
but...
it's built, can you destroy it?
Right, but it's referring to... So, the Sifrei is thinking, it must be talking about the Hamikdash, because you're not allowed to have Obama in Brighton or anywhere else. You're only allowed to have a Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash. There has to be a Beis HaMikdash for it to exist.
Before the Beis HaMikdash
was built, you were allowed to have Bamot. That is true. But the Sifrei doesn't address what we would do with the Bama. But presumably they destroyed the Bamot after they built the Beis HaMikdash, so I don't know. Right, right. But you're saying before that. I don't know the answer. That's a good question. Right.
Those were supposed to be torn down. The Malachim were castigated for not
down. Yes, but before Shlomo,
right.
And after Shiloh, mm-hmm. or before Shiloh, when they had Bamot, was what did so? I don't. That's a good question. At least according to the Sifrei. But as you go to the Urim and the Rambam, it sounds like actually there might be, because the Reim says, "Lo tasu kein Hashem avkecham tziva yotzein shalom limchok v'lo lechtoch v'lo l'shaber davar kedusha." You're not allowed to wipe out or cut or destroy anything that is holy. So that is part of the question of Shemos, part of the question of, right, that would imply that holy objects that we have here that may not even have Hashem's name on it, but if they're used for a holy purpose, let's say, like the poles that hold up the Sefer Torah, they don't have Hashem's name on it. So according to the Reim, it sounds like you wouldn't be allowed to just get rid of those or destroy those. It's a biblical prohibition. Except Parshas Re'eh Anochi, Unitatzim Tzimtzim Shpartim Es Matzav Osam, Vashem Tzimtzim Ve'ish, Psilei Elohim Tegadeyon, Uksei B'samoch, Lo Tassim King Lashem Elokeichem. So it sounds like the Urim would also probably include it in that, possibly a shul, if you consider a shul to be a davar kedusha. Well, we also know that the Urim says that awe and proper treatment, if you look at source 6 on page 2, the Urim says explicitly, we actually read this Urim before, we're not going to read it inside again, but he says explicitly that proper attitude in the shul, and proper attitude towards the shul, and we talked about what behavior is appropriate towards and inside a shul, he says that obligation to treat it with respect and awe is biblically required, and one of his proofs for that is this pasuk of Lo Tasun Kein Lashem Elokecha, which means that he thinks that he clearly would include the prohibition of destroying, of dismantling a shul within the biblical prohibition of not treating a davar kedusha the same way you would the worshiping places in Avodah Zarah of the nations in Israel. The Mate Yehuda in source 5 says that you could distinguish between the Beis HaMikdash and the Shul. He says, "Apagav deish lechalik bein mikdash lebeis haknesses." You could distinguish between the Beis HaMikdash and a Shul. Dahataninan shalhi, brachos. So we have a Mishnah in brachos that says, "Lo yikanes adam harabayis lo b'makila." We learned this in the last year, which is that you're not allowed to go into a Shul with your staff and with certain things. The AFLP came, the Beis HaKnesses mutter. But a lot of the things that were on the list are allowed in a shul. It sounds like there is a distinction between the way we treat a shul and the way we treat a Beis HaMikdash. There's some distinctions. And maybe that indicates that the Beis HaMikdash has a biblical status and the shul only has a rabbinic status. He says, "Yish lomar d'hasam, denispar, b'gamara b'hadya, ha'atar, b'Beis HaKnesses, Sharinan, Avalagabe Netitza Deloniska Rafira Shasrina. Says maybe the distinction between shuls and the Bisa Mikdash are only for the things mentioned in that Mishnah. But the Mishnah doesn't talk about whether you're allowed to destroy a shul. And so maybe for those things, we would equate a shul and Bisa Mikdash. And he says, V'afshar Dish, Ramez Min HaMikraus, Degabe Hanach, Mili, Demapik, Lu, Mikksev, Umikdashai, Tira'u, Uksev. So he says, maybe we could say the following thing. There is a pasuk that says you have to have awe or fear of the Beis HaMikdash. Uksiv Mikdash Behadya. So it uses the word Mikdash. Mashma Davka Mikdash. That implies specifically by something called a Mikdash. Avav Nititza Sa'evan Menahechal Demavkinon. But when it comes to destroying a part of the Heichal, the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't say anything, it doesn't use the word Mikdash, it uses the word, just says, Lo Tasum King Lashem Elokeichem, you shouldn't do the same to Hashem. Deloksev Mikdash, doesn't mention Mikdash. Gambi Sakneses Nikra Lashem Elokeichem. So then a shul would also be considered a house of Hashem. The Shechina Shriya Bo, because the presence of God is also in a shul. And therefore, you might think that the prohibition of destroying the Beis HaMikdash applies to a shul because it's not limited to a mikdash. It applies to anything that is L'Hashem Elokeichem, anything that belongs to Hashem. But the prohibition or the obligation of having awe and fear of the Beis HaMikdash applies to anything that's called mikdash, and that's only the Beis HaMikdash, not a shul. Of course, the problem is that one of the sources we said that there is an obligation to treat a shul with any respect comes from the same pasuk of Mikdash Haytirau, and we know that a shul is called a Mikdash Ma'a, it's called a little Mikdash. And so you could blow a hole in the Matihuda's point, but in any case, the Matihuda himself ends up saying that we only treat the prohibition of destroying a shul as rabbinic. And we're actually, even though the Urim says this, we're actually going to work under the assumption that destroying a shul is only a rabbinic problem. Because it makes things a lot easier, and it's certainly how it's been treated throughout history. If we're biblical, we'd have a lot of big problems. So we're going to assume it's rabbinic. The next problem is, so there's some kind of prohibition against destroying a shul. So, what are the rules? Does that mean that every time we build a shul, we just leave it as it is, and you're never allowed to destroy a shul? We would have the entire world, wherever Jews have lived, would be populated with empty shuls.
What makes a shul? You take all the holy elements out of it, then it's just a building. You know what I'm saying? If you take the Torahs and furniture, whatever, out of it.
Okay, so maybe we'll discover an opinion that says that once a shul is no longer being used, then it's not a problem.
What makes it a shul?
Or maybe not. Maybe once a shul is used, it's permanently a place of holiness and can't be destroyed, even after you've removed and you're not using it anymore.
What level of use and how does it have to be used to be considered a shul in the first place?
What has to be done in the shul for it to be considered a shul? That's a good question. In other words, like, for how long? So certainly we would not consider, that's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch. We'll get to that later. It's certainly the case that if you just have a room in your house that you daven in every so often, or that even people get together regularly, it's still not a shul. A shul is something that is built and renovated specifically for the purpose of davening in, and that is what it's used.
You're on a kibbutz.
It's not true.
She asked me something else. Oh, okay. She said Ellie's house, and I said it's not true.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So if you're on a kibbutz and they have a gazebo, and people pray in the gazebo all the time, and it's really not used for anything else but people going to daven, you know, and they daven mincha there, is that a shul now? Because that's what.
Because people daven in the gazebo?
Is it for davening in the gazebo?
No, I don't think just because you're used. I think it has to be designed with a shul in mind. I don't think just the fact that, you know, that you have, like, a room, like, You just have like a room in your office that you always use as the davening room. I don't think that makes it a shul. I think if it's like designed specifically for that purpose, and it, you know.
Okay, so there has to be some intention.
Yeah, I don't think just like you have a prayer room or like an area that you go to regularly and isn't, happens to not be for any other purpose makes it a shul.
Well, I thought that was because it was part of a larger house, not because it was.
No, I think even if it's just people daven there regularly and it's not really used for anything else, but it's not intended for a shul, it's still not a shul.
So how come when you have like shul and you have Torah in your house, you have to use it three times?
That's for the Torah's purpose. That's for the Torah's sake, not for your house. Because the Torah is not supposed to be moved willy-nilly. You're supposed to move. It has to have a certain level of kavod. So that's the way that you're showing your proper kavod for the Torah is that you're using it with some regularity in the new location. So now it's moved homes to your house. So that's an issue of that. Alright, so I want to read these Gemaras carefully so that we all understand the rules as the Gemara is laying them out, because otherwise the rest of the shir won't make sense. We may not even get to the second half of the shir, which is fine. The first half of the shir is basically, are we allowed to do this? And the second half of the shir is discussing a specific problem, like the specific problems with that the Gemara talks about destroying a shul, and how do the Rishonim deal with how the Rishonim deal with those problems and some of the ramifications of it. You'll see what I'm talking about as soon as we read this Gemara. I'll mention the problems as we read it. Okay, so we're reading this Gemara in Bava Basra. This is the locus classicus, I think, of this conversation. This is where we mainly talk about destroying and building new shuls. Amar Rav Chisda. This is coming in the context of building walls and when you're allowed to, and like shared walls between neighbors and things like that. So there's a lot of building being discussed, and they were talking about the Beis HaMikdash a little bit in terms of walls. The Beis HaMikdash came up, and so now we're talking about the shul. So Amar Chisda, lo listar inish be kenishta ad bani be kenishta achrisi. You're not allowed to destroy a shul unless until you build another shul. So, without looking on, not looking forward, what problems could you see arising from destroying a shul without building a new one? What reasons would you think you should build a replacement shul before you destroy the old shul?
You won't have a shul.
So one problem is you just won't have a shul, and that's a problem because?
Because people won't have a place to daven and gather.
So you should have a place to gather and daven, yeah.
You need a place to house.
You need a place to host the Torah and the other, you know, to house things. You shouldn't move it to some place. It's not the Kavodic. What else? Okay, so
I think that you have to bear that in mind, because, you know, so for example, here in Boston we have great experience with that, because Dorchester and Roxbury were, you know, there were shoals that were sold, and no new shoal was ever opened because the Kandila had grown so small they didn't have, you know, they dispersed to other locations.
But what would be the reason you're saying, okay, bring that in mind. So why does that matter? How does that affect this law? In other words, this law doesn't apply if we don't have community shuls because what?
If we have many shuls in the area, right?
Yeah.
So like we are here.
Yeah.
If we were to close our doors, there are other places for all of us to go down.
Good. So the problem is still what Abby's...
where there is the only one place.
Good. So that's so. In other words, you're basically more or less agreeing with Abby that the problem is you won't have a place to daven. As long as you have other shuls, then it's fine. Okay? Yeah?
There's a problem if it hasn't been built yet. Just because you intend for it to be built doesn't mean it's actually going to get built.
Okay, good. So that's what the first opinion the Gemara says, which is what most of the Rishonim postulate, like, which is that you can't destroy the current shul without building the new one first, because we're worried that there'll be some kind of neglect, some kind of negligence. Somehow, either the new shul won't be built or it'll take a long time, and that is a problem. There's some reason why it's a problem that the new shul might not get built. If it's because you want to have a place to daven, so that sort of bleeds into the other reason, which is what the Gemara says, that overlaps with v'ika de'amre mishum tzeluye, is you need a place to daven. So there has to be some other problem with pshusa other than you don't have a place to daven. Right? In other words, it's saying even if you do have a place to daven, we're still upset if you don't build a new place to daven first. Yeah.
So I think that part of the thing might also have to do with kedusha, right? So a shul has kedusha because of the kehila, the minions, the davening, and it lends an air of kedusha. The shul has kedusha because of the sifrei Torah and the holy objects in it. And when you build a new shul, you're supposed to go from the same level of kedusha. So if you destroy a shul and never build a new shul, then you are not following that dictum.
Okay, so well, if we get to it, we'll see if Rabbeinu Yonah has something in mind similar to what you're saying. He doesn't say anything about Kedusha particularly, but this idea may be that the reason why you need to rebuild the shul is because how could you have a town that used to have two shuls and now it has one shul? There was a shul. It was an institution. It was part of the community. You can't just destroy it. It's an important part of the community. It's not exactly what you're saying, but that's... Okay? So... But there are other ways to understand the problem of negligence. That's not just you need to have two shuls. Some other problems. So we'll get to that. All right. So let's see what the Gemara has more discussion about this. What is the practical difference between these two problems? Right. Either way, you still need to build a new shul before the old one. Says the Gemara, Ika banayu, my banayu. What's the difference? Ika banayu. There is a difference. The Ika. Now there's two. There's two versions of this Gemara. One version of the Gemara says, De'ika be'kenishta achrisi. There's another shul. The other version is, De'ika dukta litzluye. There's another place to daven. There's a big difference between those two things. Because if which is the standard text, if the text is, this is the text that most commentators understand to be, that there's another place to daven, it doesn't matter if that other place is a shul, right, then the concern of having another place to daven is just that there be some place, even a temporary place to daven. It could be someone's living room, it's fine. If the text is that there's another shul to daven in, then it's saying that even according to the opinion that the problem is you won't have a place to daven, it's not a temporary fix is not sufficient. You need, nobody would think then you could possibly have a community that doesn't have at least one shul. Okay? Whereas according to the standard version of it, is that according to one opinion, you can't not have a shul, and according to the other opinion, you can not have a shul as long as you have a place to daven. Yeah?
Would either opinion or either textual variant be concerned if you had two shuls in a town and then you destroyed one to build another one before you built the... You want to rebuild shul B,
yeah.
But if you destroy shul B before you rebuild shul B, you still have shul A, so the town has both a place to daven and a shul.
So
it's just not the one you destroyed.
Right, so if you take the version de'ika be'kinishtach b'si, that there's another shul, as the practical, as like the test case, then that means that according to the opinion that the problem is negligence, even if there's another shul, you still have to build the new shul before you destroy the old one.
Is it where you'll build a new shul at all?
Right. And then we have to figure out, well, why would you insist on having two functioning shuls? A place to daven doesn't have to be a shul. Yeah.
If we had, and I'm relating this to what's going on with us now, if we had had a real estate deal that required us to vacate this building before he built next door, and we rented a temporary place, does intent qualify?
Excellent question. Mara's going to discuss that.
Before you go on, so how exacting should we be using the language that we're using? Because is there a difference in this state between the base Knesset and the base Medrash? Right? Because we
can... Well, it's talking about a shul. We're not really... Base Medrash is a whole other thing. I don't want to talk about this. Well, I don't want to get into talking about a base medrash. It's a whole nother. You're throwing a wrench into the topic, and there's a whole nother simon of Shulchan Aruch about base medrash, and I don't want to talk about it now because it just throws us off course, and we're just going to get stuck. So right now we're just talking about shuls, and we're going to assume we're going to assume that we're talking about a shul, and this is a shul, and can we knock down this shul before we build a new shul?
Okay.
And does it matter if we have money? Can we sell this shul to someone else to use for some other purpose, or to destroy it, on their own?
Okay.
Okay, we're going to discuss this. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to talk about specific situations and how the Amoraim think you should act in those situations, or did act in those situations. And we're going to try to figure out how does that match up with these two opinions of negligence and having another shul, etc. Having another place to daven. So, this is very key. This is a very key case, because if you don't understand this case, you don't understand the rest of the shir. Mareimar Umar Zutra, there are these two guys, these were pretty late, Amoraim, late in the Talmudic period, and they, Satre Ubane Bekaita Bisituva, Ubanu besituva bekaita. What they did, and the Rishonim all amend this text to say the following, that what they did was that they had a summer shul and a winter shul. And they would dismantle and build the summer shul in the winter, and dismantle and build the summer shul in the winter. Now, what's not clear is, why this is okay, right? Is it okay because during the summer, they're using the summer shul, which is in a different location, and so they can do whatever they want to the winter shul? Is it because when they have to build the winter shul, they're building it at the end of the summer and they're pressured to build the new winter shul before winter because they don't want to be freezing in the summer shul in the winter, and so we're not worried about negligence? And if that's the case, is this a case where it's being built on the same spot or in two different spots? We don't know. It's not clear. So that's one case, and we don't know what the answer is to that. Now, based on how you understand Miriamar and Marzutra, it could be that they agree with the opinion of negligence, that the problem is negligence, and they just think that we're not worried about the negligence because we have another shul, or because the coming weather will ensure that we build the new shul. Or it could be that they hold the opinion that the problem is having another, you need to have a place to daven, and they do have a place to daven. But if they thought the problem was negligence, they would not be allowed to do this because they would have to build the new shul first. Because they would not be, if you have two shuls, you always have to have two shuls. You can't have one shul temporarily.
While
you're building the second,
they're using the word dismantling, right? You don't really know what that means, right?
Satre means destroy, knock down.
What?
They're not. They're demolishing it.
Is that what it means?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know,
Well, the translation is using the word dismantling.
I translate it however I want to translate it, but I'm just.
No, but dismantling has a different connotation. It could mean you're just taking the accoutrements out of the building and moving it to the new building.
I translate as demolish. I also said the word dismantle. It doesn't really matter because the term restore is used in rabbinic literature to just mean destroying. In other words, destroying, although I will put this caveat, that you only violate the biblical prohibition of soter on Shabbos if you have intention to rebuild. But that doesn't mean that it isn't, using a sledgehammer. So, I don't know. Anyway, let's continue with the Gemara, because there was some lack of clarity about my remembrance of Torah. Now we come to the question of... Now we come to questions that are related to Sue's question. Amar le Ravina Ravashi. Ravina said to Ravashi, Gavu zuze umachte. Let's say they already raised all the money. And everything is ready to go. They put it aside. It's in a special account. My. Can we knock down the shul now? Can we say that we're no longer concerned about negligence? Obviously, if you didn't have another shul, another place to daven, it wouldn't solve that, the opinion that the problem is another place to daven. But maybe this solves the problem of negligence. Amarle, Dilma misrami lahu pidyon shuyen behapilu. No, we're worried that maybe a more pressing need will come up, such as redeeming captives. Okay, maybe the rabbi will be taken captive, or maybe the gabbai will be taken captive, or maybe the biggest donor will be taken captive, and everybody's all of a sudden concerned the shul can't function without them, and so they're going to... No, I'm just kidding. It could be anybody. And anybody in the shul, and they're going... It's one of the most important mitzvahs in the Gemara mentions specifically, actually in Bava Basra, that Pidyon Shuyim is one of the most important mitzvos, and you would take the money and you would have to free the captive, and now you won't have a shul. So we'd rather you build a shul first and get the money for freeing captive somewhere else. Yeah.
You very well might not have the money to free the captives, in which case you could argue it would have been better for them to have freed the captives and not have the shul.
Shouldn't we just sell all our shuls in case we need money for captives?
I think the assumption of the Gemara is that you're not this. The assumption of the Gemara is that you're not going to start. You know what? Actually, we're going to get to that in the Gemara. So let's just keep reading the Gemara, because we'll actually answer a lot of your questions by reading the Gemara. So Shri Livne Hadre Hudre Machtik Shuri. Let's say I made the pillars, I made the beams, I made the wood, I made the bricks, everything. It's not money anymore. I actually have all the materials. The construction workers are outside. They're ready to build the new shul. Can I knock down the old shul before they start their construction on the new one? Says the Gemara, Amar lei zimnin de misrami lo pidyon shuyim mizab nevi havelu. Maybe you're going to sell all these still usable parts in order to free the captive. Yihachia filu banu nami. Get to Ari's question. So then maybe we'll sell the newly built shul. Amalei dirasi de inchi lo mizami. People don't sell their houses. Meaning once people live in the house, once they live in the shul, no one's going to sell the place that is their own home for that. They'll find some other way to raise the money. But no one's going to start selling buildings to free captives. It's not going
to
happen.
Having the money or having just the equipment is too liquid.
Right.
It's too easy once it's a building.
It's a building. Nobody is going to start doing that. So it says. So the Gemara then continues. Below, I'm on how the law classified to you, and that is only if you didn't see any cracks in the foundation that make it unusable, and the shul is going to fall apart. About classified to you, but if you did see, then satyabani, then you can knock down the shul first and build a new one, because of course. Because there was a case of Rav Ashi, one of the latest Amoraim, who saw a crack in the shul in Mas Mechasya, which is where he lived. And he knocked down the shul and he moved his bed into the shul so that it would be very uncomfortable and be raining on him and stuff. Lo afke ad Damascus. And he didn't remove the bed until even the what's it called, the water drain. What? The what?
Downspouts, the drain.
Yeah, the drain. Yeah, you know that. What do you call it? Gutter. The gutters are in place, so it's completely usable and in good shape. Ubal ben buta hechi asbele itzel hordas the mystery of basically we got to Adam's question. I think it was Adam's question. What about Herod? Didn't he knock down the old base image before building the new one? Probably. How so? The question wasn't really on Herod because Herod's not Jewish, but Bava ben Buta was Jewish. How could he tell Herod to improve the shul? Bama Rav Chisda lo sarin inish beknisht ad bani beknisht achri. So you're supposed to build a new shul first. Ibai sim tiyah but chazabei. Maybe he saw that the foundation was cracking. The base mitzvah is no longer usable. Ibai sim amachlus hashani. Alternatively, it's because when it comes to the government, you have to worry they're always going to build a new national synagogue. The Lo Hadra Bay, they don't go back once they have a law that they have to build a new one. They're going to build a new one. The Amar Shmuel, I Amar Machusa, Akarature, Akarature, Lo Hadra Bay. If the government says they're going to uproot mountains, they do not back down on it. So we can question whether modern governments do that, but they were confident that when it came to a monarchy, it was going to happen. And obviously there are distinctions here because this is, according to the second opinion, we're adding yet another distinction, which is if there's some way that we can ascertain absolute certainty that the new shul will be built, right? Having money set aside apparently was not enough, but if there was some way, then you would be allowed to knock down the old shul even before building the new one, even if you didn't have another shul to daven, because there was no other Beis HaMikdash to do the avodah. Yes.
Do we just stop preventing
right.
The morale? Like, what happens?
Good question. Yeah, I guess they would have to have during that. Either that or they would have some way of keeping the Mizbeach where it was without destroying everything.
Can you
do the Mizbeach without
being
a Mizbeach? Maybe. I don't know. Question?
So, if by selling this place, the deal would be that whoever we're selling it to would build us a new shul and not provide us with money. And there couldn't be negligence on our part because we wouldn't have access to this money, so then we could go through with it, even if they weren't cracks in the shul.
If there was some way of legally enforcing, of like being absolutely sure that this new shul is going to be built, then we'd be allowed. All right. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I don't know.
The Gemara never assumes that it... Well, I guess maybe they thought it was finished enough, or I don't know. But the Gemara, as it continues, says that what Herod built was the most beautiful thing ever built, and there's a Medrash that talks about, you know, anyone who didn't see the Beis Hamikdash of Herod never saw a beautiful building. So, anyway... All right, so now there's another Gemara which mentions this halacha, and it's the locus classicus not of knocking down shuls and building new ones, but of selling shuls. Can you sell a shul? Okay, that's obviously relevant for us too, because technically we're selling our shul, or at least the place where it is. So says the Gemara. So first we have the Mishnah. If you sold the shul, you're not allowed to use the money to buy a street or to buy something of lesser of lesser kedusha or lesser status. So, says the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmini, Amar Rabbi Yonasan. Shmuel Bar Nachmini said the name of Rabbi Yonasan. Lo shanu ala basic nesesh shal kvarim. First rule is, this only applies to shuls in villages. About basic nesesh shal krachin, but a shul that is the main, that is in a big city and is a public shul, kivan din alma asulei, since people come from all over the world as they're traveling through the big city to daven, you're not even allowed to sell that shul, because it belongs to the public. So if a shul exists, if there's one shul that everybody goes to, okay, it is the public shul, you would not be allowed to sell that space and use it for something else. So there are not a lot of examples of that that we can think of, but one that I would maybe think about is, let's say, the Kotel Plaza. Okay? The Kotel Plaza, let's assume, maybe has the status of something special about the Beis Hamikdash, probably not, because the Kotel Plaza is on the other side of the wall, first of all, and second of all, it's nowhere near the actual courtyard where any of the avoda was done. So, let's say the Kotel Plaza. Kotel Plaza, let's say I want to sell the Kotel Plaza and build a Temple Mount hotel there instead. So, according to this, you're simply not allowed to do that ever. Because it's a public, all Jewish people go there. It doesn't matter, the state of Israel would not be allowed to sell that to a private developer to build a hotel. It's not allowed. It's the only example I could think of. I don't know of any other shuls that belong to the public.
What about the great, the two greats and the great synagogue? The Yerushalayim would fall into that category.
Okay, maybe. Maybe. I mean, I guess so. I mean, there are lots of shuls in Yerushalayim, though.
I understand that, but that is particularly a shul that was built, I think, to have lots of people from all over the world come.
Maybe. Okay, it's definitely possible,
but
is it?
Yeah.
Oh, so then that's different.
It's owned by the rabbinate. It's not owned by a person. It's not owned by a shul entity.
Interesting. All right, so maybe that would be different, but most shuls I think we could consider of kfarim because it's just not the case that. It's not up to people. It's up to us. Obviously, we can do what we want with this shul. And this is, people do come from other places, but they're not coming specifically here from all over to come to Kadima to daven. That's just not the case. Maybe we wish it was, but so. Amar Rava, lo shanu el shalom machru shiva tuvei ha'ir b'mabad anshei ha'ir. And even when you are allowed to sell the shul, that's only you're only not allowed to sell it for some other purpose, like for the street or the hotel or whatever, if you did not sell it with the presence of the community. But if you sold it with the whole presence of the community, if everybody agreed to it in the community, then then you can even use it to purchase beer. You can use that money for anything you want. Ravina Havale Hahu Tila Debe Kanishta. So Ravina had this, there was a shul. So Asla Kami Dravashi, Amarle Ma'u Lemizra. Sorry, it was the location where a shul had been destroyed. So he comes to Ravashi, and he says to him, Can I use this area to plant things? Because the shul isn't extant anymore. It's a destroyed shul. Amarle you can do it, but only if you sell that lot, that property, with the permission of the entire community. Otherwise, and then you can plant things. So, in other words, it actually does remove the kedusha. So, for this building, if we wanted to sell this shul for the development of some other purpose, it has to be with the agreement of the whole community. And in fact, we are doing that. We are getting approval from the Boston, what's it called, authority, whatever, from the city. We're getting permission from the city. We've had public meetings. We've had public meetings here. We've had public meetings in Young Israel of Brookline. The whole shul is aware of it. All the membership is aware of it. There's no question everyone is aware of this happening, and we have clearly voted to allow doing this. Rami bar Abba, hava kabani be kinishta, hava hai kinishta atika. So Rami bar Abba was building a new shul, and he had an old shul. So the question comes up. Hava bai la mistere, lasui libne v'kushri mina, v'l'hasam. So he had this idea. Why not knock down this building, take some of the usable materials, and use it to build the new shul? Yasev kami bai le ha derav chista. So he was sitting, and he was wondering about this statement of Rav Chista, because Rav Chista, as we quoted earlier, in the other Gemara, seems to prevent you from doing this. Dam Rav Chista lo lister beit knishta ad depani beit knishta achris. You're not allowed to build a new shul. You're not allowed to destroy an old shul until you build the new shul. So the Gemara says, no, hasam yishem shiusa. That's because of negligence. Here, I'm obviously building the new shul. Right? So kiai gavnum ay. So I'm allowed. Maybe this. There's no problem of negligence here. Also, the kami to Rav Papa v'asrle. Rav Papa said, no, you're not allowed to do it, Rami Bar Abba. The kami to Rav Huna v'asrle, and Rav Huna also said you're not allowed to do it. Amar Abba, hay be knishta chalufa zevuna shari. So Rava said, no. It depends. If what are you allowed to do? You are allowed to sell it and then use it for parts. But ugura mashkuna aser. But while it's not sold, sorry, this is, I think this is an independent point. So Rava says that, so this is a good point. Let's say we built a new shul and they haven't knocked down this shul yet. Okay, and let's say, I don't know how the contract works, but let's say if somehow we own this property. So I don't think that's the case, but let's say it were the case that we still own this property, and the sale to the developer is going to happen afterwards. Can we rent out this space to be used for, you know, secular purposes? The answer is no. My taima b'kedusha sakai, it stands in its holiness. Okay. So that means that only after you sell it, with the agreement of the community, does this holiness go away. So, yeah.
If I buy a synagogue, can I do with it as, like, how do I, like, in Chelsea, there's these old synagogues. And let's say some developer, decides to sell it to me. Like, can I do with it now what I please because it wasn't used as a synagogue when it was owned by them? Do I have to, and what community would I go to get permission to do it because the community's not there anymore?
So, there was an old shul.
An old shul.
And nobody's there. Right, and you want to get... What is it you want to get permission?
I want to turn it into condos.
You want to turn it... Okay, so you want to knock it down, and right now...
No, the structure will still be there.
Oh, you just want to use it. You just want to use it for condos now. Yeah. And there's no Jews there. It's just empty. Yeah. Okay. So, as a Jew, I think you would not be allowed to do that. That's what we're saying here.
The responsibility on the owner or the...
For Jews, it's on both.
But I don't understand your answer because while I understand that if the shul membership decided to sell him the shul, then the shul can't do it, right? Because it's a Jew to a Jew.
No, if they sold it, that's fine.
What?
If they sold it to him.
Sold it to a developer, yeah. Who's decided not to do anything. He buys it from the developer. That's his question.
Is it?
I think that's not the same answer.
No, I thought it was just an abandoned shul. Did I misunderstand?
I mean, there could be a case of an abandoned shul, and that would, I think, be
I thought we're talking about there's just a shul, and we don't know who belongs to it. It's just empty shul.
He said that he's buying.
No. Somebody is going to sell the shul, but they don't have permission from the community.
Right. Now, we don't know.
It's, some great grandson, is the overseer of the property, but he doesn't live in the area, and he doesn't care about Judaism, and he just wants to get the thing off his back. So he's just going to sell it to somebody. And he's going to sell it to somebody, and he's going to.
Oh, can you? So can you, as a from Jew?
Can I, as a from Jew, turn into condos, even though it's going to be turned into condos by somebody else?
So the truth is, let me revise my. I think I misheard, or somehow in my brain didn't absorb everything you were saying. Let's look at the, because that's sort of the question that's the premise of the next five sources. So let's read those sources, because it's gonna. I want to address the question. All right, so we read these two Gemaras. One Gemara talks about demolishing a shul, building a new one, and the conditions under which you're allowed to knock down the shul and build a new one, and you have to build a new one first, or maybe And the other one is about selling. Mostly. So, but we saw before that there were opinion that clearly it's usher. One opinion it's a rabbinic prohibition to destroy a shul. Another opinion is that it's a biblical prohibition to destroy a shul. So if there's a prohibition, whether rabbinic or biblical, why does it, just because there's not going to be a problem of negligence, or just because there's not going to be a problem, there's another place to daven, should still not give you permission to knock down the shul? Oh, I sold it. So what if you sold it? Why does the Kedusha just go away? It's still a shul, and you're not allowed to destroy shuls, right? That seems to be the prohibition. So we're going to have four solutions that I found. The first solution is by the Ramban. And the Ramban has a particular opinion of what the... We actually read this Ramban and the next source, also the Ran. We read these sources when I gave a shiur on a Friday night, I believe it was, about the source and the source of the Kedusha of a shul and the nature of the Kedusha of a shul. And so the Ramban has his particular opinion that most people don't seem to necessarily agree with, which is, he says, Hiksha Ramban. So the Ramban has some question about the Gemara and Megillah that we read. And it seems like which was about selling, and it seems like from context that what he's really, really bothered by is, why are you ever allowed to sell the shul and then destroy it and build something else? Or why are you ever allowed to knock down a shul? Why are you allowed to do this? So he says, V'tiritzam, says the Ramban, Debeis Agneses Asu Oso Kitash Mishek Mitzvah Kesukah V'luvav, that a shul is of rabbinic, has rabbinic kedusha, or it's the rabbis determined its level of kedusha, and we treat it like tashmishi mitzvah. We treat it like something that is used for mitzvah. Its holiness derives from its use for a mitzvah, just like a sukkah or a lulav. Shenizrakim acha mitzvasan, a sukkah and a lulav, after you've used it on sukkahs, you're allowed to throw it in the garbage. Now you're not really supposed to throw it in the garbage, but you're allowed to bury it with less respect than you would, let's say, a Torah, and you're allowed to get rid of it in a less, you just put it in a plastic bag pretty much and get rid of it, instead of, what? Or burn it on Pesach, as opposed to, you're not really supposed to just dump it in the same garbage as everything else, but you can get rid of it, as opposed to a Torah, which you can't do that. So, bizman mitzvah, yesh ben kedusha shel kavod. So when they're being used, then they have kedusha, and you have to have respect. Kedami and hasam, aster lahartos maos kineged ner Chanukah. Just like the idea by when you light candles for Chanukah, you're not allowed to use the light for some other purpose, because it's a tashmish mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, you're not allowed to use it for something else. It has certain kedusha. Ramina nami denoy sukkah aser lizdagman and kol sheva, and similarly, anything that you use to decorate even the sukkah, you're not allowed to use for some other purpose, or remove it. Vavuan de kulon dam shlita, and the source of all of this is the blood that you have to be careful with the blood after you shacked an animal, because that blood was used for the mitzvah of shechita. Okay. So, he goes into the whole discussion of that. We're going to leave that aside, because it's a side point. Lefichach, therefore, he says, Besach Knesset calls man to b'nei ha'ir rotzin bo, no'agin bo kedusha. As long as the people want the shul, then it has holiness, and you have to treat it with respect, and you can't do anything inappropriate with it, or just knock it down for no reason. And then afilu b'churbano, even if it's already been knocked down by a hurricane or something, or some marauding army came and destroyed it, still, you have to treat it with kavod, because theoretically, sharei adayin lo avar zman mitzvaso v'arai lachzer l'vnos, because maybe the community will want to rebuild the shul on that spot. So the kedusha still exists. And he says, aval keshenimuchu b'nei ha'ir l'machro, l'shtos b'afir sheikhar shari. Then he says, but let's say the community all agrees, we care more about beer than we care about shul. Then they don't want this shul anymore, then technically they are allowed to sell the property and use it to buy beer. The fish avar zman mitzvaso, because now the time for the mitzvah is gone. V'nifka kedushaso v'manu kesukah v'lula lachar zmanim. And its holiness is gone like a sukkah or a lula. This still doesn't solve your problem, Ari, because let's say I have a shul that I know that exists in Krakow. There's not a single Jew in Krakow. Okay, let's say I knew that, right? There's a shul in Krakow. So maybe I would say, well, now that it's not being used by anybody, I should be able to buy it from the Polish government and use it for something else. I would still say no, because the Ramban said, maybe people want to rebuild it. And the fact is that if you go to Krakow today, there are a lot of shuls that the government has to maintain, the government pays to maintain, as a historical site, but the fact is that Jews go there all the time to daven. Jews go there all the time to daven. So, I would say that this Ramban does not solve your problem. Yeah. But, we still have a rule that if you only have one shul in town, you're not allowed to sell that shul. You can never have a Jewish community without a shul. So even if I'm not going to use this building anymore, I have to build a new one in this place. But if you have some other shul in town, you're allowed to sell this shul. So let's say you had four shuls and I only need three shuls, you could sell one of the shuls and condense into the three shuls. You're allowed to do that. Yeah.
What if it's not a Jewish community anymore? Let's say all the Jews are gone and they leave. Like you said, you can't have a Jewish community without a shul, but let's say...
Right. So what I'm saying is that unless the community of whatever Jews whoever might use it, got together and say, we don't want this space and we're going to sell it, then you can't do that. So I would say that as long as there's Jews who still have that property, you can't just go and use it for some other purpose.
Does the community have to pay money to save the shul from being demolished? So let's say we were using a shul on a rented shul.
Oh, to me.
It was just a building, but we made it into a shul by renting it.
Yeah.
Over, 50 years. And the other builder goes, well, I want to do something else with this property. You can buy it from me, but if you don't buy it from me, I'm going to demolish it. Do we have to pay money to keep the shul?
Read the next shul.
What?
Read the next source.
Well, that's the Ran.
I understand.
Right. Right now we're talking about within the Ramban, right? So that's an interesting question.
But the next source answers this question.
The next source is a different opinion. This is the Ramban. The Ramban saying it's a Tashmish Mitzvah. Well, actually, within the Ramban, if you're gonna stay, so then you stay. If you're not gonna stay, then it's fine.
So if the community,
if you're not gonna stay and you build some other shul, then it's fine.
If the community doesn't think it's worth the money.
Yeah, and they want to build a different shul, then they'll go do that. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
According to Ramban, that would be fine. Yeah.
Okay.
So he says it's because once you have many of a thing, then you don't, then there's no need to keep all of them. So let's say I bought 7 esrogim. And do I have to keep, since, would I say that since I could use any of them on Sukkos, and it is Sukkos, I have to keep all of them for all of Sukkos? The answer is no. I could use my esrog, one esrog today, and then since I have 6 more, eat it, and then use a different one tomorrow. As long as I have an esrog left, I can get rid of the esrog I used today. Once there's no esrogim left in my possession, then I'm not allowed to do that anymore. That's the Ramban's opinion.
Ramban.
That's page 4. I don't think we're going to get to the second half this year, which is fine. The Ran has a different solution. He says, no, I don't think it's a tashmish mitzvah. I don't think it's just like a lulav. I think a shul has a more fundamental sanctity than does a lulav. And you can't just discard it like you would a lulav once the mitzvah is done. So he says, nearly the basic knesses to kravase, kevan she'ikara asoy lomar bo darash avikdusha hitilu bo chachamim kedusha midirayim. So he says, the source of the kedusha of a shul is since you're doing holy acts in it, there is rabbinic holiness to the building. V'afilu hisnu alav zayin tu ve'yair b'mamad anshi ha'ir, y'efsha shetivka kedushasa b'kdei b'nei kavod ha'kedusha sheyishba. So he says, you can't, there is no way that that even if you got together all of the, you got together the leaders of the community and the whole community, they can't just say, nope, it no longer has holiness. That doesn't work. You disagree with the Ramban, you can't just decide, I don't want this place to be a shul anymore. It doesn't work. Mihu, l'achar she'etilu kedushaso al hadamim, but if they sell the shul is still standing, still has kedusha, they sell the shul, the holiness transfers to the money that they purchased, that the guy purchased it with, or woman purchased it with, then klisha mikedusha space akneses, and kedusha time klisha mikedusha, then the holiness of the money is the holiness reduces, the building loses its holiness, the money has a lower level of kedusha, the money would still have to be at that point used for a holy purpose. The fee shedamim ilu lo amdu mi'olam ledavar shekdusha, but has a lower level of holiness because it was never actually itself used for a mitzvah, for a kedusha purpose. So anyway, the point is that he believes that the kedusha of the shul can be transferred to money. And that would be why you'd be allowed to sell the shul and knock it down.
And it also suggests that the kedusha of the shul comes from different sources. And
right.
Come together and it's divisible.
Possibly.
Because the part of the kedusha that's in the shul is from it having mitzvot performed it.
Right.
And part of it may come from its ownership by the community and the needs of the community, the desire of the community. And even though it all transfers to the money, only part of it stays at the same level.
Right. Okay. So, right. Because you're saying that some kedusha does transfer. Right. That's true. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, based on this, V'haran tirits, t'chol ha-kedushas ha-elohim mid-rabbanan, it's rabbinic, d'rabbanan hitir alav kedusha, the rabbis made cured holiness, v'him amru pratim bazal bazal, ra'u la'asar bazal, ra'u la'atir. Therefore, since the rabbis are the ones to meet up the rules, they're allowed to tell you when you're allowed to destroy the shul, when you're allowed not allowed to destroy the shul. So they made up the rule that you can sell it and then it loses the kedusha and the kedusha is transferred to the money. And they also made up the rule that if you want to, as long as you built the new shul first, you can destroy the old shul. They're allowed to make up the rules because it's rabbinic. It's not the most convincing answer, but it's not wrong. It makes sense. It's just, it's not like, you know, so it doesn't feel so satisfying, I feel like. So the Aruch HaShulchan has a different answer based on the Rambam, which which is not so different from the Ramban. It's just a different, it's a similar idea to Ramban, but through a different method of getting to the same point. So the Rambam, so there are two Gemaras, which I didn't put here, two Gemaras that talk about the shuls outside of Israel or shuls in certain places being built al tanai, being built on conditions. And that means that when a shul is built on conditions, there are certain leniencies that we have towards such a shul. Okay? In terms of how you, the respect you have to have to the building. Can you eat there? Things like that. So the Rambam doesn't record this specific rule that shuls in, let's say, Bavel are different from shuls in Israel. He doesn't say that. What does he say? He says, "Bamed var memorim, shemotralim kor besaknesas, bebesaknesas shal kvarim." He quotes the Gemara in Megillah that we read, that there's a distinction between shuls that are owned by individual communities and shuls that are owned by the public because everyone davens there. It's meant for everybody, by Klal Yisrael. So he says, when are you allowed to sell a shul? Only a shul belongs to a village. Shalo asu oso ela al da'as b'nei hakfar levadam she'iya laham hispalel bo she'imratu kulam l'melchur mutarin. This is, where did he get this from? Okay, he just added something in here that the Gemara doesn't say, which he's allowed to do, but he's not quoting the Gemara. We thought that the point was that it's that there's something about the whole community getting together that gives them a certain power, but if there are people from outside the community, they can prevent the people in the community from having that power. The Rambam is saying, no. All community shuls that are built for a particular community are built on condition that the community has a right to sell it if they want to. If that's so, according to the Rambam, says Aruch HaShulchan, read 13, Umidivrei HaRambam nirali teretz achin, bazah. He said, the Rambam has a different answer for this problem. Kvar kasan v'simen kufnun av sif yadala deha Rambam hishmit hach tabis batiknis. He says the Rambam left out this whole rule that shuls outside of Israel are built on condition. And we explained there that he thinks that any shul is built that's built out tonight, if you want to, you can sell it. He says even if the holiness of a shul is biblical, and even if the Urim is right that destroying a shul is a biblical prohibition, he says, Ikra tam la raman de kol beis haknesses mistama bonin al tnai. Every shul is built on condition. Al tnai zen shi yabe yicholas amokhan that you're allowed to sell it. Velitnan vehava kakdesh lizman. It's like a temporary holiness. And so as soon as the community together decides we no longer want the shul, then they're allowed to sell it or destroy it to build a new shul. So that is the Rambam, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, solution for this problem. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a much more involved and creative solution. Well, I have 3 minutes.
Okay. So, I'm not sure I understand where you get that the community owns the shul in the Mikvah in the big city. My understanding of it is the Rambam is simply saying that if the shul is in a metropolis, in a big city,
yeah,
then when people, because it's a metropolis, people travel there for commerce and for other reasons.
Yeah.
And because of that, that's the reason. I don't understand where you're getting that the metropolis owns it.
No, the Rambam says that it's, what did the people who built the shul have in mind? If they had in mind that the community owns it, then the community is allowed to sell it. If they had in mind that this is going to be for the world, for the whole world, anybody could come and daven here, then it's not up to the individual community to be allowed to do that.
I understand that,
but that's different from what the Gemara said. Because the Gemara didn't say that. The Gemara just said that the community has the right to sell the shul if they get together, but if other people use it, they can prevent the community from deciding that because it hurts the other people.
Correct, but when we looked at the Gemara before, right, we said that, you know, my example was the great synagogue in Yerushalayim. We don't have a venue yet, by the way, so we can continue.
Okay.
We don't, okay.
Almost.
So the answer we got was because it's owned by the public. But according to this Rambam, I don't think it matters that it's who it's owned by. It was constructed.
Correct. The Rambam says that it's not about who owns it. It's about what they had in mind when the community built it. So, I never said.
Okay, fine.
I never said that all opinions agree with what I said. No, but no. I was just saying that's pshat. The Rambam has his own unique opinion, and that solves some of the problems. Okay. I just want to read Dekos Moshe. I don't really have like 1 minute. Maybe if we get a minion before then, whatever. All right. So, but Moshe Feinstein says the following. He says the Tzarech Lomar Devada Hitilu Bochacham Kedusha Kedusha Over Haran. I agree fundamentally with the Ran that there is holiness to the shul, and it's not just a tashrish mitzvah that you just get to throw out like a lula. Aval gam bekedusha deoraisa chazinan dekasha adaver naasa enu ra'i. But he says, even by something that has a biblical kedusha, unlike the Ran, it has a biblical kedusha, even if the shul has a biblical kedusha, once it's no longer usable, it actually can lose some of its holiness. Like, for example, if you had an animal that was set aside for a karban and then it died, it doesn't have the same level of holiness. It doesn't have the same level of holiness that it did when it was alive. Ubichatav samistos shemutarin b'hanah min haTorah. You're allowed to use them. There's no problem of hanah, and there is no problem of me'ila, which is improper use of a biblical sanctified item. Umitamzam istaber shema she behema shehuktasha. Kedushas Haguf Shein Badin Pedia Mikamakom Kshanasis Balmum Niftis. So he says, and that explains why an animal that was set aside for a karban, while it's still healthy and everything's fine, then you can't even transfer its kedusha to money. But once it has a mum and it can't be used anymore for the karban, once it has a blemish, then it can be redeemed. So its body can no longer be used for its purpose. So nafka mimela mimana chumras kedusha sagraf. So then it's the intrinsic holiness of its body disappears. Ach machmas shel adam imadayin hiruil nishar ba kedusha damish aisa bechlal kedusha sagraf sheish bechlal masaymana velachin tzrichim yichon leftosa. But the value of the animal still has some holiness, so therefore the money to which it is transferred has holiness. So he says the rules of the holiness of a shul are the same as the rules of the holiness of an animal that's meant for a karma. But based on the biblical rule, but they didn't give it entirely the same level of kedusha. So they didn't have this rule that the holiness remains at all. Achlamela yishchilah debekachim calls on Shuriyan lo paka daha einichon lachzar mehakdash alom yisorach ba daaf hamosar dechatos hashamos hakraven olos. He says, but if you have an animal that's no longer going to be used for the carbon you had in mind, it still has some kedusha because it could be used for a different carbon. V'imkin yisorach ba. I'm not going to translate, it's not so important right now. But once we've decided we're not going to use the shul anymore at all, Sheshuv in Sorokbo has no use because no one's going to use it as a shul, Havi Mamilik in a Ra'oi, then it's like it's no longer usable. But, he continues, I'm going to say this outside, he says, here's the problem. That would mean that I could just willy-nilly destroy a shul as long as I don't want to use it anymore. The problem is, you can never really prove that I really don't want to use the shul anymore, because maybe I'll change my mind. How do I really, really, really know that the shul is no longer usable? Either it has a crack in the foundation, or you've built a new one, or you've sold the property.
Well,
at that point, clearly, I sold it to a developer, I'm not going to use it anymore. So Moshe Feinstein says, if you sold it, or you built a new shul, or there's a crack in the foundation, now you're allowed to destroy the shul because clearly you're not going to use it again. And the Kedusha is gone. And so that ends. So thank you very much for listening. Maybe we'll do the other half of this year another time. Let's daven Mincha and Marav.